What up?
Nothing much. The stock market.
Is it?
I don't know. Could be.
Do you own any stocks?
No.
Have you ever?
No, actually.
Welcome to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. That is Michael Coughlin.
I invested Esquire. Myself.
Do you even do that? Like, drugs don't count as investing in yourself.
I think Pfizer would disagree.
You should buy stocks in whatever drugs you're currently doing.
That would be an interesting idea. I'm not doing any drugs. Shut up. Just start the show, all right, you judgmental jerk.
I tried and you cut me off.
That's fair.
This past weekend, we had UFC 230. It happened in Las Vegas. Sometimes they call it... I'm lying. It happened in New York City. It wasn't in Las Vegas. It was at MSG.
Were you going to have some sort of like catchy... Sometimes they call that Sin City.
I was going to say Paradise. Oh. But I was wrong. It was in New York, New York. Popular city. A lot of people live there. Attendance was 17,011 at MSG. The gate of $2.8 million. In the main event, my heart was broken when Daniel Cormier successfully defended his heavyweight championship by defeating Derek Lewis with a rear naked choke at 2:14 of the second round. This fight was depressing if you were a Derek Lewis fan. He looked in way over his head here. Cormier took him down with like single leg takedowns, left and right, ankle picks. It was not pretty. Lewis couldn't really get up and just gave up his back and got tapped out in the second.
Yeah, it was sad. It was short. And like, I guess the good news is that neither guy got hit really. So like, you know, like, that was the thing. It's kind of like almost everyone involved going into this fight knew what this was. Like, Cormier knew what it was. Lewis knew what it was. The fans knew. Like, we're all just kind of like, all right, we got our fight. Neither one of you really got hurt. We know neither one of you trained at all. Derek Lewis, you openly admit you're not in shape. Cormier, your boss said that you are not healthy enough to fight on this show like a week before they booked it. So we weren't expecting all that much out of you. And you gave us more than we could have ever delivered. Expected, whatever.
Did you hear that Cormier in the morning when he woke up the day of the fight, like, sneezed and his back went out and he almost had to pull out of the fight?
How is this man a world-class athlete?
It's amazing.
Like my grandma would call my mom and be like, I sneezed this morning. I got to go to the hospital. Like, oh my gosh. You know, the fucking, I don't know. My grandma sounds like she's like a high-pitched, like a Jew on helium here. But, I need more Vicodin.
One of my major takeaways from this is that Cormier is really underrated and underappreciated. I think he'll kind of be somewhat forgotten about historically when people look back at MMA in this era.
I think he might be okay because I think that fucker's going to be on TV for 20 years.
Yeah, true.
It'll be
true.
Like a Troy.
I think he's just going to be a jolly, happy-go-lucky.
Well, he's definitely jolly.
300-pound announcer. Yeah. You know what I mean?
He's going to be Taz.
Kinda, yeah. Same height. But my point is this: you see those John Jones losses, and granted, one's a no contest because of the drug test failure. But otherwise, like, Cormier's never lost a round in his career. He destroys everybody. You look at like the Josh Barnett fight where he's throwing Barnett around and throwing Dan Henderson around. And granted, Derek Lewis isn't like this world-class athlete, but he did win, you know, 9 out of 10 in the heavyweight division in the UFC. He's a bigger guy. He's got, you know, a 10-inch reach advantage and 5 inches in height and 20, 30 pounds on Cormier. Cormier just whoops his ass. I think Cormier was like 250, and then Lewis claims he had to cut weight to get to 265. But neither here nor there. Cormier is an elite fighter. And of the guys who's never popped for steroids, he's like up there with GSP, in my opinion, with the one loss and the one no contest, and dominated every other fight. He's been it.
Yeah, I think that the only difference between him and GSP would probably be that St. Pierre has done it at the I think he's definitely done it longer. And I think that there's something to be said for St. Pierre's ability to basically be at the highest level since early 20s, and now he's in his late 30s. Like, not Cormier's fault, you know, he's wrestling and all that, but there's something to that. And also, like, St. Pierre, the welterweights just feel like they're, you know, they're better fighters. That said, of the two of them, I feel much more comfortable saying that Daniel Cormier is not on something as opposed to St. Pierre.
Based on appearance, you mean?
You know, they say you can't judge a book by its cover, but, you know, as Norm MacDonald pointed out, but if it's really thick, no one's going to bother to read it.
It's funny, too, because Cormier at 5'11 is a much smaller dude than all these guys he's fighting. Like, most guys 5'11 are fighting at, you know, 185, 170.
He's like King Mo. He's what they all thought King Mo would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right down to the wrestling thing and the dead children. Ooh.
Understood. But yeah, Daniel Cormier deserves to be, you know, considered one of the best MMA fighters of all time. And I just don't think people usually put him in that company.
It is weird because you're absolutely right in that there's a strong case that he's the greatest of all time. It's, you know, him, St. Pierre, Mighty Mouse, who's already been forgotten for a number of reasons. You know, like, he's there, but he's in this weird era where Conor McGregor's changed everything. Ronda Rousey was huge. And then Jon Jones was like this weird guy who was just clearly better than Cormier. And we all know it. So it's really weird to call Daniel Cormier the greatest of all time while this fucking cokehead's walking around being like, I have pictures of him crying after I beat him. And I hold them up and display them to everybody. It's like, it's a real tough one. It's a real fucking weird position to be in.
I mean, the other thing with Cormier, too, is he started in MMA late. He didn't start until he was 30. You know, and now he's going to turn 40 in March. Like, these guys we're talking about, Jon Jones, you know, Conor, Ronda, these other big names of the same generation started 10 years before he did, as far as in their lives, you know? So, anyway, undersized, old, and still better than everybody else should be written on.
Still awful on fucking commentary, though. He really, if he wants to save his legacy, he'll stop that.
I've seen things about him. He was going to have a tryout in WWE as a commentator.
What?
I saw things that he was going to try out as a commentator in WWE.
I said, come again? What the fuck? What is
he's a WWE? Big fan.
Sure, but it's whatever. Good for him.
Who's Cormier going to fight in his last fight? He wants to retire in March at 40. Brock is going to come back.
I think he fights Brock in February, March. Yeah, in early March. And then Brock goes to WrestleMania a couple weeks later. And they're going to bet it all on Brock beating him and going to WrestleMania as the UFC heavyweight champion. Okay. Which would honestly be a really cool fucking story.
Especially if Brock won.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, if he could actually do that, and that's not totally outside the realm of possibility, holy fuck, that would be the Monday Night Wars all over again. That would be stealing the other promotion's title and showing up on TV with it. How awesome would that be? They gotta make that happen.
Are you aware that Brock won the WWE Championship at whatever that is, Crown Jewel?
Did he? Huh.
Yes.
I had no idea.
And he apparently is signed for a few more matches. So his UFC return apparently is in jeopardy because he signed this new deal with WWE.
Brock going to Saudi Arabia and doing pro wrestling, I would feel no moral indignation at that at all. Like, that seems totally okay to me. Like, WWE, it feels really shitty and kind of cheesy and, like, it's kind of scuzzy that, you know, they're kind of getting in bed with these mullahs. But, like, Brock, it's like Trump. He's just so blatantly like, I'm here for fucking money and that's it. I'm not pretending like this is anything more than a pure cash grab because everything I do in my life is this way. I don't care who you are. I'm getting your money. And you're like, all right, I get it.
Both Cormier and Jon Jones have said they're not interested in a third fight. Cormier says he's moved on, and Jones says he's already kicked Cormier's ass twice, so there's no point in fighting him again.
Well, Jones will totally do it again. In he'll do it with just that attitude of, hey, all right, let's do it.
Well, I was thinking if Jones beats Gustafson, then they could do Cormier-Jones at heavyweight.
That would
Jones
be best,
could be
yeah.
champ.
And that would be really interesting because that could be your chance to essentially do like a de facto first time ever two titles are at stake.
Yeah. And they could also play it off that, you know, Cormier is more comfortable at heavyweight and he's depleted at going down to 205, which makes no sense. But they could make that argument, Jones's first fight at heavyweight, that sort of thing. And because in theory, we've already seen how this Jones-Cormier thing plays out, and it doesn't go well for Cormier. So,
but this would give it an added dimension that we haven't seen before. And more than anything, I want to see what kind of fucking godlike freak John Jones is like if he doesn't have to cut weight.
True.
I mean, my gosh, this could be – and Cormier is a perfect guy for him to fight, too, because we already know what he can do. It's not like he fought Stipe, you'd be like, well, he's bigger, but, you know, maybe the exercise he has, it doesn't work. It's like, nope, he can be those – another guy that's oversized, we might see the greatest performance of a fighter of all time is John Jones just fully full of water beating up that little fucking donut hole.
We had two guys from Texas in the last couple days here losing, but still coming out a winner. One was Beto O'Rourke, another's Derek Lewis. He got a lifetime supply of Popeye's chicken in Houston, that's, I believe. He can go there anytime. And have Popeyes whenever he wants. Yes, honest that was part goodness. Of he got an endorsement deal by Popeyes.
That's honestly not the worst thing. Like, it seems kind of dumb, but I can see it. I would fucking take that deal. I'm sure it's not. It didn't cost him anything
for him to have a lifetime supply of chicken.
Yeah, probably like you know they just gave it to him.
Good for you, Derek. It's probably part of his endorsement deal.
I mean, you're fucking stuck living in Houston for the rest of your life, but other than that, not bad.
He was eating Popeyes all through, like, fight week. There was a ton of videos of him doing ads for Popeyes and stuff. And he said he got, like, a good endorsement deal. And Cormier said Lewis even told him what he was making, and Cormier said he was jealous and felt like he should have got that deal.
You know, I wonder if there's something – like in the black community right now, if they talk about this, the conversation is framed as, look at Lewis. He is clearly playing up an old black stereotype and taking advantage of these dumb white people. These fucking racists are eating it up. And like it's accepted within the black community to do like these almost like a modern minstrel act type of deal. But like they're all laughing at us. But they're laughing at us doing it. Like they're playing us like we're the marks. And they're the pro wrestlers, and we don't know it yet. I always have this feeling that people are laughing at me, so this is how I concoct my worldview. That's right. All black people are laughing at me.
I doubt any are actually thinking about you. In the co-main event, we had Jacare Sosa defeating Chris Weidman by knockout at 246 of the third round. This was a really good fight. A lot of action. It was all standing. They were throwing bombs at each other. I had Weidman winning the first and Jacare winning the second. So it went down to the third. And Weidman looked good. Like, he looked like he was going to win
really
the fight.
He looked really good. Yeah.
And then he just got drilled with a punch and, like, went down hard.
Oh,
like,
this is the – in the yeah.
Uh-oh. Like, you don't see that often. Like, guys, like, stagger, fall down. He went down like a sack of potatoes, to use that analogy.
He went down like the towers.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. He was dead, but then like he kind of rolled over and kind of tried to wrap his arms around Jacare's legs for like some sort of takedown, just out of habit, I guess. And Jacare was real hesitant to throw any more punches, but I think it was Big Dan Mergliotta. He didn't wave off the fight, so Jacare had to throw like a couple like lazy hammer fists, and then he pushed Mergliotta so he would stop the fight, and he stopped it. But Weidman was clearly out, and just it was like reflexes had taken over for Weidman. But kind of a weird ending to that fight for sure.
Yeah, I mean it's a shame that nothing will come of that because if there was any justice, Dan Mergliotta would be some. There should be some sort of repercussions for that. Because that's when you do a bad job your job and you're a ref, and people get fucking punched in the head a lot more, you fucking dick. You should get suspended or lose a paycheck or something. Like, that's a big fuck up. That's a real fuck up, because, like, everybody was watching. Like, I think you had 19,000 people in the arena all going, stop it. And he's going, hey, hit him some more. It was bizarre. You could see clear as day that Wyden was out. He was, like, he grabbed around the ankle, but he was hugging that thing. And he didn't know what was going on. Jacare didn't, his balance wasn't threatened whatsoever. And, I mean, when the fucking, you know, if I'm guessing illiterate from Brazil, who doesn't speak English, can somehow figure out how to say in English to you, he's had enough, and you still don't, you know, fuck off. But yeah, I mean, it was a great fight, though. I mean, the fight was fight of the night, way better fight than I would have expected. They just stood and threw hands and kicks and, you know, the other things that they use. And, you know, Wyman looked really good early. Then in, I don't know if he faded or what it was. I think, you know, Jacare just seemed to kind of fucking go for it. Like in that third round, he was just throwing. He wasn't giving a fuck. He was caution to the wind. I'm a 38-year-old man, and I already know the brain damage is set in, so let's see what we can do type of movements there. And fucking, hey, if it didn't work.
Wyman now falls to 1-4 in his last five.
So someone is going to Bellator.
It's interesting, though, because all those fights, like, he lost the Rockhold fight where he lost the title, which I thought he was winning until he threw that spinning elbow. The Yoel Romero fight was really close until Romero landed that one knee.
Yeah.
The Gegard fight, he kind of got screwed with those knees where he was grounded, but they fucked it up.
Yep.
Then he beat Gastelum, destroyed Gastelum.
Remember who the referee was in the fucking Gegard-Mousasi fight? You know where it took place?
It took place in Buffalo.
Is that Buffalo? I thought it was MSG.
Nope.
The referee was Big Dan.
I believe it.
Yeah.
And then this Jacare fight. So it's like he lost to all the best guys in the world, like all top five guys is who he lost to. And he was ahead in like the first couple rounds of most of these fights. And then he's just gotten clipped.
Yeah, he's been losing the game of inches. And this could just be, you know, these are the signs of a guy getting older. They're all close losses.
Yeah.
But that's
it's funny though, because all the losses are to older guys. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh yeah, but when you get older, you start to fade. Everything close becomes a loss.
Mm.
And for all those other guys, you know, maybe that was like they've been getting blown out, and this is like their one deal, and it could just be bad luck in that sense. But yeah, you know, this is what happens when you fade. You start everything becomes like it looks kind of like it was a fluke punch or a lucky punch or whatever. But that's might be the difference in the half millisecond reaction time.
Sure.
So I think in conclusion, Wyman's a really good fighter, and I think he deserves to fight like a David Branch type next to see where he's at in life. And then they can decide whether to put him out to pasture or not.
Yeah. I mean, the theory was if Wyman won this fight, he'd be the number one contender at middleweight and get the winner of Whitaker and Gastelum, but that's obviously out the window. And I don't think he could put Jacare in there off this win either. So it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing plays out. Rockhold's still out there, injured. Prior to that, we had Jerry Cannonier defeating David Branch by TKO at 39 in the second. Cannonier's an interesting fellow. He debuted in the UFC at heavyweight. I think he had two fights at heavyweight, moved down to light heavyweight. Now he's fighting at middleweight and is like shredded.
He's Joe Riggs in blackface.
He is, but he's jacked. He's looking like
it was crazy.
Like a real middleweight.
I looked at him. I was like, you know, sometimes guys drop weight classes and like they like Diego Sanchez, he gets all kind of like weirdly skinny. And you're like, oh, it doesn't look good. Like BJ kind of looks odd. No, Cannonier, I'm like, oh, you definitely should have been looking like this forever.
And he beat Branch in this one, and Branch is a real top 10 middleweight, perennial middleweight who's been around for a while. He won this fight by TKO. I had him lose in the first because Branch was kind of getting takedowns, but he just hit him with a short, I think it was a short right hand, and just rocked Branch. And Branch rarely loses, rarely gets knocked out or finished, so good win for Cannonier in his middleweight debut on short notice.
Yeah, and you know, Cannonier, that's a good fight for Wyman. You know, give him somebody. Mm. Wyman, you know, could use a chance to beat somebody who's kind of got a little bit of steam, who can't wrestle, who's black. They always like that. They're always big on pushing the white guy beating the black guy. Fucking racist Jews.
In another middleweight fight.
I did not realize I could be doing anti-Semitic jokes about the UFC ownership. Damn it.
Carl Roberson defeated Jack Marshman by unanimous decision.
I don't remember this.
I don't think I saw it. In the opener, Israel Adesanya defeated Derek Brunson by TKO at 4:51 of the first. Kind of a coming out party for Adesanya. I mean, we've talked about him for, you know, a couple of years now, probably, but he's got that kickboxing background, and always the concern was, you know, what's going to happen when he fights a upper level guy who can get some takedowns. Brunson tried for takedowns in this fight, never really got them. Adesanya was able to get underhooked, stop the takedown. And then at like with a minute left, he started just, you know, throwing punches and rocked Brunson and had Brunson stumbling around the cage until it was waved off.
This was a star making performance. This is the first time like in a while we've seen a guy in the UFC where you go, oh, like just really caught my attention. So slick. It was his presence afterwards, his ease at speaking, his youth. He's really fucking young, too. Like, I would say he's like 24 or something like that. Pretty young for that skill.
29.
Okay, you know, but in the black years, that's 24. They age different. I don't know.
He's from Nigeria. He could be 39. We don't know.
You know, I tried to give the black man a compliment, and you brought it down like a racist motherfucker.
It's based on nationality, not race.
Fair enough. You are not a bigot. I promise. Anyway, he looked really great. He's going to lose. I've seen this enough times with the guy who just looks super great, especially with state that's striking. You can look really impressive sometimes striking wise if you're just leaps and bounds ahead of everyone. So I feel like I've seen this collapse. On the other hand, could be Conor McGregor. I mean, you don't want to put that kind of pressure on somebody, but he's really got something. I'm like, okay, I can see this guy connecting and to appealing, you know, to the urban demographic that the UFC hasn't really gotten yet.
He is very charismatic, exciting style. Again, it's like what's going to happen when he gets into that top five territory is going to be the question. But those guys are kind of getting old. You know what I mean? We're seeing, you know, Weidman, Rockhold, Jacare, Romero, getting into their mid late 30s now, injured more often, getting knocked out more often. It's like, you know what? Maybe he's going to be the next guy at middleweight. Obviously, Whitaker's there and is a problem.
But, you know, Whitaker's the kind of guy that does lose to someone like Adesanya. You know, I always feel like a guy like Whitaker is a very talented guy in everything, very technical, kind of an intelligent fighter. Reminds me of like an old school, like Rich Franklin type almost. And then an Anderson Silva comes along and you just go, okay, right. Different level of athlete. This guy's doing things at a higher, faster pace. And a guy like Whitaker, who has been able to kind of like exploit the technical deficiencies of some of the bigger guys, like Joel Romero, they'll catch up with him against this, a guy who's faster and younger, although he may not actually be younger.
Who would you like to see Adesanya fight next? So I have a fight in mind.
Let's see. He's at 185. How about you tell me who you're thinking of?
I was thinking of Anderson Silva.
Yeah, that'll work. That'll be a big fucking step up. That's a big step up. But
Silva's out of the top five. You know what I mean? It's really not.
Well, no, yeah, it's true.
He's been off for, you know, well over a year. He's 42. It would be a fun fight. You know, it would stay standing. And it would give Adesanya a chance to, like, get a win over a legend. And maybe, you know, it could be Anderson's last fight. I don't really want to see Anderson fight anymore. And if he gets lit up on the feet by somebody, you might say, all right, it's time.
To be honest, the first name that came to mind for me was Michael Bisping, so I can't really criticize your choice. I kind of had the same idea. Like, I want to see him punch somebody old right in the face. So that'll work. Yeah, I can't. Okay, you know what? You sold me. I fucking like the idea. Anderson Silva's a great choice.
It could be the changing of the guard. You know, the new younger
black
striker. Yeah, but one's Nigerian and one's Brazilian. I don't know if that's similar or not.
Black
but
is black, man.
Oh, okay. So
you see Black Panther, like all blacks across the globe are all part of one black family. That was like
I saw Black Panther? What's your guess?
I like to hope that you're not a racist sometimes, but maybe you want to brag about your Boston racist roots where you don't watch movies full of blacks. I don't know.
I did not see Black Panther. Oh. FS1 prelims. Jordan Rinaldi defeated Jason Hick Diaz. Jason Knight? Is that Hick Diaz?
That's Hick Diaz, yeah.
Yeah, he lost again.
Yeah.
He's on a big losing streak.
Yeah, he kind of a fun fight in the sense of Hick Diaz kind of tried, you know, to be... He, like, stick his tongue out. Like, he was aware of what he's doing. Knight has a good body triangle, and that's about all.
Sarge in charge Eubanks missed weight by 1.2 pounds. She was originally scheduled on this card on short notice for a featherweight title. Not featherweight, although she probably could make featherweight. A 125-pound title shot against Valentina Shevchenko. That fight got pulled when they moved Cormier and Lewis on this card. So she ended up fighting Roxanne Modafari. Foxy Roxy, and ended up winning 30-27 on all three cards. But I secretly wished she had still had the title shot, and it was the main event at MSG, and it got pulled because she couldn't make weight.
God, that would have been amazing.
That would have been the best.
I'll say this. Sarge here, she's won me over as a fan. The way that she just leaned into all this stuff, and she's just like, sometimes you miss weight. What are you going to do? Shit happens. And she essentially said afterwards, I had my period. Like she said, like in the interview with Rogan, like it was some like fleeting thing, like, and you know, and I'm a woman and this happened. I'm like, oh, is this like a bloating thing? Now that may be bullshit, but I'm enough of a man who's completely far removed from like how women's bodies work. I'm like, well, yeah, that sounds good to me. Yeah. Women just they put on water weight sometimes. Yeah. I'm not going to criticize the little lady there. Also, she was a fucking beast in this fight. Like she looked really good. She looked very athletic, very strong in there. Beat the fuck out of Roxy. She really whooped her ass.
Yeah, Roxy's kind of... Like, every time I watch her fight, I get sad, usually, because it's like you want her to be good and you want her to win, and everyone's there's like there's a moment on the ground where you're like, oh, that was pretty good. And it's like, ooh, as soon as she fights anybody, like, athletic, she's fucked.
And, like, she's got... You know, she had some moments. She had a great judo throw. I think the second round it was, but... Look, Foxy Roxy is an average individual in every way, like as a woman who worked really hard before this was ever a thing. And so she's kind of got some veteran smarts now, but this is the next generation. And luckily it's women, so I don't think they get hurt as much, but I hope she doesn't. I hope she saves her money.
She's like Mark Kerr.
I bet we're the first MMA and stuff here at halfguarded.com, everybody. The only fucking place you'll ever hear Roxanne Modafari compared to Mark Kerr.
They have so much in common. I was disappointed. Sergeant Charge here claimed she was gonna call out Joe Rogan in the post fight interview, but Rogan apparently apologized to her. For saying he didn't know who the hell she was when it was announced she was going to be in the title fight on this show. So she didn't have to call Rogan out in front of a national television audience here.
Yeah. I hope somebody also took her side and been like, look, you're not going to win that exchange. Even if like Joe, trust me, Joe won't go after you. He's not going to try to be a dick. He'll just stand there. The crowd will murder you for this. Like you are not going to come. This is Joe fucking Rogan. He's the most, he's America's greatest man right now, lady. And you're a whiny bitch who's black. And trust me, this is a white audience. It's just, they're not going to like a whiny black woman when she's yelling at the bald white guy with money. Pick your battles, honey. Know the crowd.
Shimon Moraes defeated Julio Arce. Split decision 28-29, 29-28, 30-26. memory serves me, one of these guys bled a lot, like on a short, like up elbow. I think it was Arce.
Yeah, I think Arce got cut from like an elbow. Yeah, it was an up, like an upward left elbow in the second or first.
Yeah.
It was like on the side of the head, so it was never, you know, credit to Eve Levine, who didn't stop this fight once. It, honestly, the cut, it just looked bad, but it's purely cosmetic from what I could tell.
A lot of blood,
and they were speculating, hey, is he going to, like, lose consciousness, or is he too weak, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, first of all, if that does happen, okay, it's a sport where people routinely kick you in the head to knock you out or choke you until you pass out, so passing out from a little loss of blood, probably not the worst thing. Like, that happens to people a lot when they give blood and stuff, right? So, it's not sanitary, but oh my gosh, the blood was just incredible. It was everywhere. It looked like, I don't know, like some of Jackson Pollock's earlier work, or maybe a Cesaria and Eubanks period party.
Lyman Good defeated Ben Saunders by knockout, 132 of the first.
A little short uppercuts from what I remember. Correct. Ben went for it all, and then he got knocked the fuck out, and he probably went to the backstage and was like, hey man, can you teach me that technique?
Matt, on the UFC Fight Pass prelims, Matt Frivola went to a draw with Lando Vannata. That fight was supposed to be really good. The first round was supposed to be amazing. They both dropped each other like three times. Haven't seen it. Shane Burgos defeated Kurt Hollabaugh with a armbar, and Marcos Rogério de Lima defeated Adam Wisniewski by unanimous decision in the opener.
Yeah, that happened.
Fight of the night went to Jacare and Weidman. Performances went to Jared Cannonier and Israel Adesanya. Two men who, when they got in the cage, got on all fours and pretended to pee in the cage.
What was that about? Are they? I hope they're on the same team.
I find it amazing to get performance of the night for that.
I wonder if they're getting. I hope they're on the same team. Otherwise, what I really hope and what I first thought was, because Adesanya came in there and kind of like did that first, and then Cannonier did it, and Cannonier's was like a little more pronounced. And I thought, I hope Cannonier just saw that just now and thought, hey, that's kind of cool. Let's do that.
I think he did because he smelled where Adesanya peed and went on top of it, which territory. Which
they set it up.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. If that could build, like, I don't think they're going to fight each other next. I think that'd be silly, but I think it could build to something down the road. It's a funny little gimmick.
And is that allowed, though? Can we hype a fight between two black guys as look at these animals marking their territory?
Sure.
All
right. This is for alpha males.
Alpha males can stop racism also.
Like war machine. Forget what I was going to say. I lost my train of thought. But oh, Cannonier, before the fight, he was like in the tunnel getting ready to go out, and some little kids like yelling at him, trying to get him pumped up. He's like, "You can beat Yoel Romero. You can beat all these guys." And Cannonier, who like pretty strict about like what you wear to the ring, you got to wear your Reebok shit.
Mm-hmm.
Just took off his Reebok shirt and handed it to this kid who was like hanging over the the walkway to the cage. It was just kind of a cool moment. I think the dad was filming it on his iPhone and it kind of got leaked out there, but kind of a cool moment. And Cannonier seems like a good dude from the one clip I saw from him in a tunnel.
Yeah. Hey, you know, as long as you meet this man in a tunnel before he's about to beat the fuck out of somebody in a cage fight, not a bad guy. All things considered there.
Oh my God. I like that you judge people on stuff like that. Like any of these fighters, we don't really know them. It's just based on, you know, scrums and how they fight in a cage. It's kind of ridiculous.
But we do know them, don't we?
I don't know. I behave differently at my job than I do outside of it.
I don't, which is part of the problem.
That's why.
I mean, I'm the way you're
you.
Yes, I know. It's a bird.
Speaking of people who are having issues with their jobs, it looks like the entire flyweight men's division is going to be defunct at the end of 2018.
You mean next month?
As I predicted.
I like when you said that. It's like when I saw that first thing, it's like by the end of 2018. Like, this is some big fucking plan. Christmas trees have been up for like a month and a half, people.
Did you hear who broke this story?
Botter?
Who?
I don't know, Jeremy.
The fuck is that guy?
Yeah.
Jose Torres.
Oh, yeah.
MMA junkie that he was released from the UFC on Wednesday morning and was informed that the promotion plans to shutter the division entirely. Torres initially posted his claim in a response to a tweet from Flow Combat. A person with knowledge of the UFC's plans said the organization is indeed currently looking to trim down the flyweight roster. That person is not publicly authorized to discuss the matter and spoke on the condition of anonymity. The person added, there's currently no directive to immediately eliminate the division. So
yeah, my guess is what actually happened is this guy got cut because it's whoever this guy is. And like his manager or somebody as like part of like the softening the blow deal was like, yeah, you know what? We're kind of like phasing out your division. Like, you know, maybe they don't need you. Like maybe if you move it up to 135 or something like that. And in reality, yeah, it's probably just some guy that nobody fucking knows. And they're trying to not hurt his feelings.
Yeah, Jose Torres claimed he wasn't given the option of moving up to 135, and he was just cut coming off a win. So, I mean,
well, whatever. It's not like the company, you know, maybe they've just decided that they need to, you know, they need to maintain the credibility of their titles. It's very important not to bastardize what it means to be a UFC champion here. Why would they get rid of a title? This fucking company creates interim championships like it's herpes in a sorority house. And here they're going to pull this shit.
Yeah. I mean, when they got rid of DJ and you were hearing rumors that Cejudo was going to go up and fight Dillashaw, I was like, something seems weird here. You're getting rid of the only name in the division. You're trading for a wrestler that no one in the States even knows in Ben Askren. It's like, this seems weird. And it wasn't as weird as I thought.
My new theory is that this is part of a deal that we're not aware of where whatever fucking, I was going to call it Effervescent Media, whatever they're called, UFC's owners have like worked out something with the, we'll say, Department of Justice to let Mighty Mouse go to Japan so as to avoid charges of creating a monopoly in the MMA market. They're saying, see, there's plenty of competition for us. Why in Japan, they've got a guy. They were able to take one of our guys, considered the greatest fighter of all time from us. If there wasn't equal competition, how could we lose the greatest fighter of all time? Really? Yeah. So that's my theory. And in return, Dana gets to watch Ben Askren get punched in the face.
That's fair.
And it's not Dana's money anymore. He doesn't care.
How many flyweights do you think are under contract to the UFC at this moment? As long as it
12.
34.
Holy fuck. What the fuck do they need 34 people under contract for? They need one, the champion. Nobody else. Where else are these other people going to fucking go? Why even keep them under contract? They don't need the health insurance. Fuck them. They're small. Small people don't get hurt. They just bounce around like children. You never see kids in a hospital.
It could be like the women's featherweight.
Exactly. Exactly what it should be like. Just every once in a while, they should find some dumb bastard from 135 who decides to emaciate himself and bring him down.
This MMA junkie article has Dominic Cruz spelled as Dominc. Well, D-O-M-I-N-C-K.
It's not like they're professionals or anything.
Do they get paid for this? This was written by two people and they still spelled Dominic Cruz's name.
Imagine needing two people to write an article on fucking MMA.
Steven Morocco and John Morgan.
Like, I know what really, I know what it means. Like, you know, they shared their fucking info. They're my anonymous source. Like, you don't get to tell me like you have an anonymous source off the record and then this asshole goes out and tweets it. We all know it's the same fucking person. It's like when CNN had Lanny Davis. He was their anonymous source. You can't do that.
With UFC 230, there was a presser before the show for UFC 232. That's the show headlined by the interim light heavyweight title fight between John Jones and Alexander Gustafsson.
That's a real light heavyweight title fight.
is it now?
Yeah, Cormier gets stripped the moment that they punch or whatever.
Okay. I can't keep track. Weird. Some of the highlights I felt we should go over.
Now, how great would it be, though, if they created an interim title in the same month that they got rid of the flyweight title?
That would be good.
Took Dominic Cruz's belt and just like, I'm sorry, not Dominic Cruz, Henry Cejudo's belt, and they just like put a little more leather in it so that Jones could wear it. Because he's a.
I feel like Jones and Cejudo are probably closer waist sizes than we would think.
Maybe. I like the idea that John Jones would get a flyweight title belt, though. I could see Jones really getting into that. Jones seems like the kind of guy that would get off on taking a smaller weight class's title belt as his own.
Who's Tyson? What the fuck's his name? Huh? Tyson Fury, Tyson Kidd. No,
Tyson.
The guy. Remember he was feuding with him on Twitter.
Yeah, like, that's
like
true.
DMs
yeah.
and Tyson Griffin put him out there. He does like to pick on smaller guys. Another Verdum.
What's great about Jones though is that he also picks on like people in his own weight class. He just doesn't give a fuck. He's just an asshole. He's not a bully. He's an asshole.
Here's some more examples of that. In regards to the first fight with Gus, he said, "I didn't train as hard as I should have. I was winning so many fights. I was being a wild dude, and I was still winning, and it caught up to me. It definitely caught up to me."
You've had five fights since then, you asshole, and you failed drug tests in all of them.
Gustafson replied, "Excuses, only excuses. That's the only thing I hear. That's all I hear. I beat you once. I can beat you again."
Wait, hold on. Okay. The whole "you're just making excuses" thing only works if you actually win the fight. Otherwise, like, what is Jones making excuses for how he beat you up? Like, nobody gets to say "you're just making excuses for how you beat me." That's not how it works. Jones, if you beat the other guy, you're allowed to say, "Yeah, you know what? I wasn't at my best. I could have done better." In fact, we expect that out of our champions. There's a humility in John Jones's words.
John Jones came back with, "If my excuse is that I didn't train hard enough, what's your excuse for losing? We had a close fight, but did you get ripped off in the Daniel Cormier fight as well? What about Anthony Johnson? Did you beat him? What about Phil Davis? Did you beat him as well?"
God, John Jones is so fucking good. Like, he is fucking, he is Trumpian the way he just hits you with absolute truths. Like, this shit, people are just like, "Fine, you're a dick." And he just doesn't give a fuck. And it only works because he's a dick. God, I'm so happy he's back.
I was too. I mean, it's sick. It's a sickness. And like, in the back of my mind, I have this weird feeling he won't even make it to the fight and something weird will happen.
He's got to get through the holidays, man. I mean, really? What the fuck? John Jones has two major holidays to get through. He's not going to do that sober.
Jones is guaranteeing that he's going to finish Gustafson.
He may do that, but he's not going to be doing this training camp very seriously. He's going to take the long weekend around Thanksgiving. We know this. He's going to eat as much turkey as he fucking wants. He doesn't care. He's John Jones.
When they ended the presser for pictures, Jones and Gustafson had a face-off. Then they were supposed to stand side-by-side for pictures. And Jones, like, kind of edged his arm in front of Gustafson. Then Gustafson did it back to Jones. And then Jones shoved Gustafson across the stage. And Dana had to break it up. So, good times there.
Yeah, most people think this is contrived and fake. But we all know John Jones truly is an asshole.
He also said he still wants to fight Brock.
Who doesn't, man? I mean,
I'd rather not.
I'd fight Brock. Are you kidding me? That'd be fucking awesome. Just as long as Dan Mergulat isn't the ref.
Do you think you're getting points?
Honestly, I just do it for the fun, for the fame, for the sport of it all. You know, as a sporting man at my core, I'm all about challenging myself.
How much time would you like to train for that?
Oh, I don't think it would really matter. I mean, let's say I wouldn't train for the fight.
At all.
No.
Like, go for a jog or anything?
No. I would not train a single fucking bit for it. Because it would not make any fucking difference at all in the fight. And all it would do is ruin my week or whatever. So,
my week.
You know, why do that? Why put myself through that kind of shit just to get my ass beat? fuck it. I'd probably just start doing more drugs.
Can I corner you?
Sure. Why not?
I'll never have to get into the cage, so that'd be nice.
Honestly, all you have to really do is walk behind me and hold up like a goofy sign or something.
I don't think I'm allowed to do that anymore.
Trust me. We're going to do whatever the fuck we want on this one and done deal here.
Like Michael the Truth Jackson. Moving from one a-hole in John Jones to another.
I thought you were going to call me the a-hole there. I'm like, hey, what the fuck?
No. I try and be more subtle with my disses. Ali Abdelaziz made an appearance on Ariel Helwani's show this past week on, I think it was Monday. Either way, it
Wait,
was
before
awesome.
We get to that.
Yes.
I had a reminder came up on my phone here.
Uh-oh.
I had an idea. I'm going to write this as an idea. I've fixed the weight cutting issue in MMA.
Oh, good.
I have figured out. I think I figured out.
Are you going with my idea or just there's no more weight classes? It's just height classes.
Well, that's then we'd have the then we could really see if Cormier or St. Pierre is the greatest of all time.
Nobody's pushing for that.
Cormier and St. Pierre would be the same class, though. They could fight each other.
Weigh whatever the fuck you want. You just got to be a certain height.
Yeah. Anyways, my idea. I think it's a really good idea. All right.
Yes.
Right now, our problem is we don't want people to cut weight, but because it hurts them and they're missing this and that and blah blah blah. But we don't trust people to like kind of move up to the right weight class. So here's my proposal. Fighters are given an option. You can take lightweight. You have to weigh 155 pounds the day before, or you can choose to weigh 170 pounds on the day of. That way, you would give people an incentive to not cut the weight while also ensuring that they have to be at a reasonable weight relative to the class. And therefore, and if somebody wanted to cut the weight, they could still feel free to cut the weight as they've always done. And then they would just have to see, and then they could weigh 180 for the fight or whatever they wanted to do. You give people the option of you can be smaller and never cut weight, or you can cut weight and probably be a little bit bigger.
Wait a minute. So the day of the fight, you can weigh in at 170.
Yeah.
Why not just cut down from 190 to 170 and not?
Because you still have to weigh in. Because you'd have to weigh in day of.
Right, but people will still just cut a ton of weight from 170. You'd have 185-pound guys cutting down to 170 the day before and then just being less hydrated in the cage, no?
But, again, if people are going to do that, so be it. But No.
What time do you weigh in on the day
off? I would say, literally within 5 hours or whatever. Like, close enough that you...
So, 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, noon. Close enough that you couldn't... That you basically could not cut weight and compete, like the idea, and you could also you could throw in something really easy. There would be create some sort of super hydration test or whatever that you have to weigh 170 and be fully hydrated or whatever.
Yeah, I mean the argument against same day weigh-ins is always guys will just go into the cage more dehydrated. You know what I mean?
Maybe, but
people are dumb.
It does seem though that to me that the. The closer the weigh-ins are to the fight, it seems that the more guys make weight. So, anyway, the point is you still give people a little bit of an option there. And you can, again, you can just tell guys, look, the guy's cutting down to 170. You're just looking to be like, you're not in this division. We know you're not in the division. We're just not going to book you. And plus, if he wants to do that, fuck it. I'd rather get in there fully hydrated and beat the fuck out of some moron who just cut 20 pounds of water. I mean, you see those guys, they can't fucking move. When they cut weight like that sometimes. You think Khabib's going to be able to pull that shit off?
I don't know. With Ali assisting him, maybe he can. So anyway, Ariel and Ali have had a love-hate relationship over the years, I guess. I get the feeling that although Ariel has his faults, if he's called Ali out a couple times and calls him a bully. And, if he talks any shit about Khabib jumping over the cage or whatever, Ali gets pissed, that sort of thing. So he had him on his show and Ali was talking a lot of shit. He says he's going to smack Conor McGregor in the face the next time he sees him. And Ariel talked to him about his terrorist ties, and Ali didn't deny it. It was something to see. It was probably about 30 minutes, and it's worth watching it. But I'm not going to rehash all of it, but I found it entertaining, and I felt like Ariel, to a certain degree, stood up to him and deserves some props for it.
Ali, he seems like he's maybe learning the lesson of Trump. Just fucking lean into it, man. If they're calling you a terrorist, be like, yeah, fucking did it. I'm a fucking terrorist. Because it turns out that when people accuse you of these things, if you just say, yeah, it's true, nobody has a follow-up. You know, if Ariel goes, hey, are you connected to terrorists? And you go, yeah. Nobody, everybody expects you to deny it. And the journalist mindset is, I got to be really clever and I'll get him to admit the bad thing he does. But if the guy says, yeah, I did it, then they're like, okay, well, clearly you're not being prosecuted by the United States of America, so fuck. I was Bahrain these days.
The thing is, though, he just, it's not that he denies it, he just kind of doesn't answer the question. It's one of those where it's like you accuse somebody of something and the response is you deflect. Like, what about so-and-so? You know? But it was entertaining and I enjoyed it. And I like Ali being put on the spot. Some of it was kind of like high school. Ariel's going at him. Who acts like that? Blocking people. That's a child. That's a high school kid who acts like that. You know who acts like that? You're taking a page out of his book, out of Dana White's book. You're acting like Dana White. You're acting like a bully. You're getting too emotional. You're trying to intimidate people, and you're trying to intimidate the media. You can't do that. It's not your job. You know, to say that face-to-face with Ali on air, I mean, probably a lot of other people, other reporters and MMA journalists, I use with quotation marks, aren't going to confront Ali like that because he has some power. He has access to a lot of main event fighters, guys who are getting title shots, and you're not going to stand up to him because you lose your ability to get those guys on your shows, which is key to, you know, their business.
Yeah, but then you're aiding and abetting terrorism.
I'm not defending.
And I would think that in a post 9/11 world, we've all learned a lesson about trusting brown people. Especially brown people that come to the United States on 9/11 with a fake fucking passport and a different name or whatever. And they come from a Middle Eastern country that hates us.
Yeah.
And their name is Ali. Like, I wouldn't trust that guy. Don't trust that guy, Ali, with all those other credentials. Especially if it seems like his job is to, we're not really sure what he does, but we think it might be some sort of elaborate kickback scheme with Dana White. And nobody would be surprised if it was.
Yeah, I mean, the theory that was bouncing around on Twitter the last couple of days is that Ali, you know, goes to his fighters with, like, whatever the UFC's offer is and says, this is the best I can get. He manages, like, 50-something fighters in the UFC. So say every guy gets 20% off their purse based on what Ali is telling them. Maybe the UFC gives Ali 5% of that themselves and he pockets the money and UFC makes 15% more and Ali makes a shitload more because he's got 50 fighters in the company. That's the theory.
It seems like a lot of work to cheat. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, if you're the UFC, this ain't worth it.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, it's, you know, a couple grand. We're talking about $5,000-$10,000 a fighter. You're going to fucking risk what would be one of the biggest fucking scandals that could ever bring down your sport over, you know, $75,000?
Well, I want to say it's exponential. That's probably not true, but when it's Khabib in a main event, Frankie Edgar in a main event, Cody Garbrandt in a main event, could be talking, you know, over time, some serious dough, six figures anyway, but
here's the thing. But this stuff
I don't totally into that because it sounds stupid and like Dana White's going to risk everything so Ali can make some more money.
Exactly.
Like, just tell Ali the purse is $200,000 and that's what it is and not give Ali anything. Let Ali take his 10-20% of that $200,000, whatever he's ripping these guys off for.
Especially for a company molded in Dana White's image, which is like Dana never seemed to do. He's not that. He doesn't come across as the kind of guy that would do this kind of scam and work. Like, this is too much work for him. Like, Dana, this is way too much interpersonal interaction with somebody that you know Dana doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fucking manager.
Right.
I'm sure that Dana's on record calling him a scumbag somewhere.
Well, it's interesting, too, like the access that Ali gets. Like, he was on the bus with Khabib. You don't see these other managers around as much. Like, you see Malky a little bit, but, like, Ali's always there. He's on stage with Connor at that presser when he's asking him about Noah and stuff. He's, like, really, I don't want to say in bed with the UFC, but he's always there.
He's like, trying to play the – he thinks he's a Don King.
Right. He's a promoter.
Yeah, and he's not. He's – probably just a terrorist funneling and fucking washing money for other terrorists.
That would be a story.
It's probably what he's doing.
Well, I think he turned informant supposedly. I think he's probably got out of the terrorist scheme and now like somehow managed to become a multimillionaire. The other side story with him is the whole WSOF thing where he was the matchmaker.
That one I could see them running this scam with. That one makes more sense because I don't know who the fuck's behind that weird shit. That one, I think that maybe that's what they're doing.
There's just so much with them. And like promoting Khabib meeting Kadyrov and Putin and the guy from Turkey. It's just like
Erdogan, yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's gross. I think it's gross, and I get people do shit for money. It happens all the time, but it's like you could make a good living and just, you know, be a decent human being. But whatever.
It makes me wonder how much these guys are getting offered. Like maybe it is really good money, but look, it'd be one thing if it. And it's weird because MMA's always had a very odd history with that region. Particularly, you know, Abu Dhabi, which just has many of the same problems as Kadyrov. But when it's one thing if it's like a guy like this crazy sheik in Abu Dhabi, where you're kind of like, well, this guy's like a real legit fan. Whereas Kadyrov, I think the guy is just, I don't think he's a fan. I think he's a real scary psycho. Yeah. Like, I'd be afraid to go there. Like, the sheik in Abu Dhabi ain't going to fuck with you because he's a fan of yours. Kadyrov will fucking rip your heart out and do other awful things with your body, with his penis and stuff, and just for fun. Like, I'm sure he's raped and killed children. He looks like he's absolutely done that.
Just not gay children.
The Jew dog children. He rapes and murders them, and I'm sure that those words have come out of his mouth. I hope they have. Otherwise, that's just me. Ugh.
My favorite MMA promotion, Ryzen FF, announced Sunday night that Floyd Mayweather will return to the ring on New Year's Eve to fight undefeated kickboxing sensation Tenshin Nasukawa.
Oh, this is so great.
Floyd was in Japan at a presser and said he was going to fight Tenshin, who's a 125-pound kickboxer who's done a little MMA. I don't think he's really fought any traditional boxing matches professionally. He's 20 years old, little Japanese man. And I don't mean that as a stereotype. He's 125 pounds. He's a little Japanese man. Like, this would be the first fight where Floyd Mayweather outweighs his opponent by 20 something pounds. Anyway, Floyd said it was going to be, they hadn't determined time limit rules. If it was going to air on pay-per-view, a lot of the details had to be ironed out, but the fight was on and possibly be an exhibition of 3 3-minute rounds. People went crazy. They're like, what the hell's going on? Yada, yada, yada. And then it turns out Floyd Mayweather says the whole thing was a miscommunication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a real polite way of saying these fuckers lied to me. We all know what they did. Well, you and I do. This is exactly what the Japanese do to people. They're a sneaky people. Remember Pearl Harbor?
I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah. Fucking, that was them.
So 3 days after his news conference in Japan, he appeared to call off the bout in a lengthy Instagram post on Wednesday. Here's what Floyd wrote. Now that I am back on U.S. soil after a long and disappointing trip to Tokyo, I now have the time to address you, my fans, and the media in regard to the upcoming event on December 31st that was recently announced. First and foremost, I wanted to be clear that I, Floyd Mayweather, never agreed to an official bout with Tenshin Nasukawa. In fact, with all due respect, I have never heard of him until this recent trip to Japan. Ultimately, I was asked to participate in a 9-minute exhibition of 3 rounds with an opponent selected by Ryzen, spelled R-I-Z-E-N, Fighting Federation. What I was originally informed of by Brett Johnson of One Entertainment was that this was to be an exhibition put on for a small group of wealthy spectators for a very large fee. This exhibition was previously arranged as a special bout purely for entertainment purposes with no intentions of being represented as an official fight card nor televised worldwide. Once I arrived to the presser, my team and I were completely derailed by the new direction this event was going, and we should have put a stop to it immediately.
But, you know, we were kind of like, oddly enough, I think his excuse is essentially, I was being polite. Like, that's what it comes down. It sounds like his excuse always comes down to, which, honestly, might be, I could see him being like, man, I'm in a fucking different country with people I don't fucking know, speaking a language I don't know, and these people are fucking doing shit, and if you're Floyd, you know everything in his brain's like, and they're Japanese, they got, like, swords or shit like that, like, I'll just say that I'm going to do it and get the fuck home. And the moment he gets home, he's like, I'm back in Vegas and I'm safe.
He went on, I want to sincerely apologize to my fans for the very misleading information that was announced during this press conference. And I can assure you that I, too, was completely blindsided by the arrangements that were being made without my consent nor approval. For the sake of the several fans and attendees that flew in from all parts of the world to attend this past press conference, I was hesitant to create a huge disturbance by combating what was being said, and for that I am truly sorry. I am a retired boxer that earns an unprecedented amount of money globally for appearances, speaking engagements, and occasional small exhibitions.
So it sounds like he's done this before? Like there's some like occasional small... Does he regularly get like... paid $10 million to do closed-door boxing matches with rich people?
It sounds like it.
Because that's fucking awesome. And I don't know why he's not bragging about that all the time. And when he heard that he's going to get $150 million from the Japanese, he must have thought, ooh-wee, this could be a hell of a thing. I bet he thought it was some sort of like crazy Yakuza thing. Like it's New Year's Eve, they're going to have me fight some guy. Nah, that'd be too dangerous for Floyd.
Who knows? Well, he was in Chechnya like a month ago shooting guns. Maybe he did an exhibition there, too.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Floyd's got a lot. I was just thinking that supposedly this is going to be $150 million. I saw some number bandied about or whatever. And I can totally see Floyd agreeing to show a thing, things like this. And one of the negotiating points being, I want you to announce this number. You don't have to pay me this. I want you to announce it. And in that respect, all I can think of is, that sounds like Donald Trump.
Well, they totally inflated the WrestleMania price when he wrestled Big Show. I think he got paid $2 million, but they said it was $20.
Yeah, so that's probably that was probably what he's going to get to do. He probably thought this was going to be some sort of like pro wrestling thing. That's why exhibition, you know, we didn't know the rules. As if Floyd Mayweather... going to fight with anything but boxing rules. What rules would he possibly negotiate for a real fight?
Even if it was boxing, it would have been really weird. Him fighting in Japan on New Year's Eve, he was saying he wanted to fight. That's one part of the story that doesn't really jibe with his Instagram post, is that he said he wanted to fight for the fans of Japan. He had never fought overseas before. He had only fought in the U.S. He wanted to fight for fans in Japan was his claim. And maybe he said that because of the pressure of the situation and being at the press conference. And he didn't really know what was going on. But I'm that sure kind of contradicted his later statement.
Like I said, his excuse is essentially, I was being polite.
Yeah.
Which is baffling, but sort of fits. I can see him being polite, maybe on accident. Sure wasn't polite when he beat up that girl.
This was true. One person who wasn't polite about it was Conor McGregor. Where is it? I can't find it.
Did he beat up a girl?
No, but he commented on the fight.
Oh yes, he did comment on the.
Trying to pull it up here,
Conor. I I think it looks bad whenever Connor talks about Floyd at all, because it kind of comes across as like the guy or the girl, depending on your preference, who doesn't let go when the relationship is over. Like, he's always just kind of like popping up, like, and reminding everyone, hey, everybody, like, remember when I did this really crazy cool thing? And Floyd's kind of like, dude, you're like my fifth guy I've done that with. Like, okay, be cool, man. Like, act like you've been here before.
Right after the fight was announced on Instagram, Connor posted this that got 1.7 million likes. Is that a tracksuit or a sauna suit, Floyd? Haha, what the fuck? Is it hot in Tokyo or what's the story here? That climate change is no joke. Fuck me. Ha.
None of that makes sense, by the way. What does that mean? Why would he be wearing a sauna suit if climate change was happening?
It's a joke, I guess.
Does Connor know what a sauna suit does? Does he think it protects you from the heat?
What in the fuck is going on here? Who's this little prick next to you? That's mad shit. Like something out of Rush Hour 5 or something. Chris Tucker and Jackie fucking Chan back in this bitch. Fucking brilliant. Mad little bastard you are, Floyd. Fair fucks to you, mate. No lie. Fuck it.
So, cocaine's fun. I mean, it's just got that crazy, like, stream of consciousness. Like, what is this fucking Rush Hour 5? What the fuck is this? Yeah, but by the end, it stops being like racist, because at the end he's kind of like, hey, you know what though, man, fair play to you guys. You're doing your thing. I love it. And you're kind of like, that doesn't really excuse the part where you went racist as fuck on two different races at the same time. But at the end you did say good for you. So thanks, I guess.
Tension Nasakawa, who gets forgotten in this whole thing, wrote back to McGregor on Twitter. Hello, Mr. McGregor. My name is Tenshin Nasakawa. I am not Jackie Chan. I promise to avenge your loss, so please watch my fight.
I wonder if he's in on the scam, or if he's a rube. I bet he's in on it. They're all in on it.
I mean, he's a relatively big star in Japan now. I mean, he's 20. He's like this kickboxing sensation. He's won a couple MMA fights.
Is he delusional enough to think that Floyd Mayweather was going to fight him?
I don't know what he thought. I don't know, but I like it. For some reason, I want to see Tenshin Nasakawa versus Conor McGregor now.
Well, hey, I think that everybody wins in this scenario. Floyd got some publicity on TV, and then he can come back to America and be like, I don't know, fucking Japanese, man. What do you want? And everybody will be like, yeah, that fits. That sounds about like exactly what I've heard about that they do. And so, yeah, that's good. And then the Japanese, you know, Nasakawa, he's a name. It looks like he got all this publicity. And the people of Japan don't seem to care about fraud, so whatever.
In other Asian news, Sage making a trip to Singapore this week. And rumors are floating that he might be also signing on with One.
Sure. I mean... Okay. I hope he does. I hope that One has lots of fun and does whatever they want to do. They seem to be getting money. And history tells me that it's a scam, but I think everything's a scam these days. It's in the air.
They got some big funding. I don't know from who. I never bothered researching, but they got like $150 million in like some venture capitalist bullshit.
Mr. Yakuza.
I think that's Japan. Singapore is a different place.
Yeah, but One is doing shit in Japan.
A little bit, but I don't know how much. Have they run money shows in Japan?
Never mind, I was confusing them with Ryzen. Why do we need Ryzen and One? What the fuck? We don't need both of those.
That's what they're saying about Bellator and UFC.
We don't need Bellator and UFC.
We don't need any of this, actually.
That's true. This is all a bit futile sometimes when you really think about it. In 100 years, none of this is going to matter.
Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking Sage would be a good fit in One, to be honest. He's not ever going to, I shouldn't say ever. currently he's not an elite UFC fighter. They put him in with somebody decent with a name. He's probably going to lose to him. So go over there and fight some cans and do some crazy kicks and get some cool knockout finishes. Build your name up over there, get a little more experience, probably a raise. I'm guessing one's going to offer him a good chunk of change, more than he'd make in the UFC. Then come back to the UFC in a couple of years with like six straight wins and knockout finish. That would be my cut. Probably. If I was his dad, but I'm not.
However, we know that his dad is the one that will be making the decision here. So that's good to reference it.
Am I old enough to be Sage Northcutt's dad?
No.
How old is Sage Northcutt?
Technically, you could be, I'm sure. I'm sure you're more than like 13 years older than him. But.
19. I could have birthed him.
I don't think you ever could have birthed him. I think that would have been a real big story if you had. If you birthed anybody, that'd be a story.
Yeah, back then. I mean, men in 2018 can have kids.
I was going to say, like, I fucking forgot that biology has changed in the past 20 fucking years, and apparently men have children now.
Have you heard about modern technology? What the fuck?
Yeah.
Dana.
What the fuck's going on? What's going on with the fucking world? There's some story the other day. I don't know if it's a story. Yeah. It was a tweet. It was like, or that maybe it's on the radio. Whatever. I heard it somewhere. It's probably fake news. But the woman, the headline was like, "I'm a lesbian and my trans, and I'm married to a trans woman, and we're going to have a baby the old-fashioned way." And it's like, you're just two straight people, you assholes. It's just a man having sex with a woman here. I don't know why you guys had to complicate it with a bunch of weird underwear. Just do what you're going to do.
Dana White thinks Roger Goodell is underpaid.
I bet he does. He is, compared to Dana.
He told the Palm Beach Post, "Not even the unions. I'm just glad I don't have to deal with all the stuff the NFL has to deal with. The NFL has to deal with a lot of stuff. They always give that commissioner a hard time, man. But let me tell you, every morning when I wake up, I thank God I'm not him. They'd have to pay me way too much to take that job. No way in hell. There's no doubt. Goodell has to deal with things that I hope I never have to deal with."
Here's the thing. He doesn't. It's not the same kind of job. Dana runs things. Dana owns things in a business that doesn't make sense. Roger Goodell, he's just a fucking figurehead. He just takes shit in public and that's it. He gets paid $50 million a year to do what? The NFL never makes the right decision on anything, and all the rules are set. Like, the fucking rule book exists. He's not changing it or anything. And otherwise, his job is what? Sell the product for the most money. Yeah.
How much do you think Anthony Johnson weighs right now?
257 pounds.
285.
Oh, wow.
He's looking pretty swole.
Wow, that's a lot of weed he smoked. A lot of edibles there. 285 fucking pounds. He is 115 pounds heavier than when he debuted in the UFC, in theory. 115 pounds.
Remember that fight where he got poked in the eye over and over again?
Yeah, and then, God, that was awful.
And then Mazzagatti said he got TKO'd because he got eye poked repeatedly. So good. That's one of my favorite fights ever.
And now he's 285 pounds. He's bigger than Alistair Overeem.
It's almost as good as when Paul Harris thought he had won the fight and jumped up on top of the cage and Herb Dean had to pull him off the cage.
When he fought Dan Miller in Brazil.
Oh, God. Memories. Paulo Costa, speaking of guys who are swole, is injured and out of his planned January fight with Yoel Romero. So that fight has been put off again.
That's a shame. I feel like we're never going to get to see that. Those two go at it. Like, the universe just doesn't want to see us.
Hello?
Yeah. Fuck, do you hear me? Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello. Fucking the hell.